Hey everyone, welcome to Past Lives and the Divine. I'm Gina and this is the podcast where we enjoy the wonderful, empowering conversations about our connection with our past lives and our connection to the divine out there and the divine inside each and every one of us. And we do this for healing, maybe feeling a little bit better, maybe reaching more of that full potential of the life we came here to create. And of course, we do it for a little entertainment. In today's episode, episode number 29, we're talking about my past life regression, one where I was the client, and this session takes place earlier this past summer, where I saw a life where I was on another planet. Two other planets, actually. And I feel like it's time to record this episode, but I honestly, like, I don't even feel really qualified to speak on it. No, I'm still trying to make sense of like what I saw and what this means and do I believe it? As you all know, even though I do this work, I have a real healthy dose of skepticism as to like what's really going on. You know, like even though I have that skepticism, I do not have a drive to like, you know, try to gather all the information in a past life regression so we can try to like prove it or look it up and make sure this was a past life, like an actual life on Earth. And I don't have that, but like, I don't know, for this experience, I just felt like, I don't know if I'm ready to talk about this past life regression, like in this public, potentially live forever mode that is a podcast episode. But for whatever reason, there's a big part of me that also feels like I'm going to get more out of it by, you know, reflecting on it like I do in these sessions or in these episodes. So just like for me to recount the experience for myself and for anyone interested in listening, of course, that's why I have this podcast. And maybe in doing this, maybe there's someone out there and their experience will be validated if they're feeling a little crazy for feeling a certain way. Or maybe it'll just like wake something up in someone else. But just to know that I'm talking about this experience and what it's meant to me so far, but and another thing I'll say about it is like, I do feel like it's a part of something bigger. Like, I feel like I'm going somewhere. I mean, we're all going somewhere. And I feel like this is just like kind of a weird step that makes you go, what the fuck's going on? And so I'm going somewhere. We're all going somewhere. And this is just like a step on the process here at this time in October of 2020. It's really like here's what I think of this right now. I'm sure it'll grow and I'm sure it'll change. And maybe one day I'll come back to this episode and be like, whoa, you knew nothing of what you were speaking about. But as I said, I think even in the first episode of this podcast where it's like, if I need to show up and be like perfect and have all the answers, I'm never going to fucking record a podcast episode. So here is where I really feel like, I don't really know. Like I don't know how I feel about this. It's so new, but I do know that there'll be value in me just reflecting on it. I do feel like it's time for that. And maybe it's because it's like going to come out about Halloween, which is like my favorite holiday. So yeah, I don't know. Take it with a grain of salt. Let me know what you think. And if you're on my email list, like you get my emails about events or new episodes, you can just hit reply to that email and let me know. Or you can head over to Instagram at pastlives.tourguide. Send me a message there and let me know what you think of this. Let me know what it did for you. And like I said, I'm just kind of like, I don't know, beginner's mind on all of this. Before we get into that, I want to tell you about an event that's coming up. I am partnering with Ashley Sondergaard again. We're going to do some yoga and group hypnosis. And this time, the theme is about like, it's all about gifts. So there's kind of two branches off that. One is like knowing and honoring and cultivating your own gifts, but then also like reflecting on the gifts of 2020. I think it's really easy. And I say it and everyone says it, but I think it's easy to be like, oh, 2020, what a garbage year. Like, take me back to the life take me back to life in 2019. And really, and I do say that, and sometimes I do feel that way, but I look back on like how much I've changed just kind of internally, the way I see things, the way I don't know, go about life. And right now, after like being 6 months or more in this pandemic, it's really like I can reflect back and see like the gifts of this time, essentially. And there are many. And I think that reflection is just an incredibly important part of growth, especially when you think of like soul growth, things that we work on, particular like in past life regression, for example. And it's one of the reasons why I do this podcast, and it's one of the reasons why I always record the sessions and give clients the notes, is because I think that, especially with hypnosis and growth and change, it can feel really slow. And particularly with hypnosis, we're working in the subconscious mind, right? So you're creating changes on a subtle level, but these subtle changes just change the way you operate automatically. And while that in itself is a gift to not have to like consciously control the change, it can be a way that we just kind of like go about our life. And if we're not mindful and we don't reflect, we don't get to see all of that growth. So with that in mind, Ashley Sondergaard and I are putting together this event. It's on Thursday, November 5th, 7 p.m. Central Time. That's in the U.S. And it's a digital workshop, so it's all online. And we'll use some short writing prompts, restorative yoga poses. We'll do that guided self-hypnosis, all to honor your gifts, the gifts of 2020, to just like reflect, acknowledge, and then begin to cultivate even more. You know, calling in what we want most in life, embodying more of who we're meant to be. And we can do that even more by understanding our individual soul gifts. From my experience and what I've seen with my clients is like part of living a good life or a fulfilled life is like operating on that soul level, using your gifts, sharing your gifts. And that automatically leads to this deeper sense of fulfillment that I think a lot of us, myself included, think we're going to get by ordering that new sweatshirt or moving house or getting a new car or a new job. And it's not that those things can't help. They definitely can help. But when we have all our needs met on a basic level, to feel more of that fulfillment, I think we have to go within and like cultivate our gifts and understand our soul and our soul's history. And anyways, if you feel like that is in alignment with your life, I think you're really going to like this event. And if you're unable to join us and enjoy with us this event, you can also, you can still purchase a ticket and you can download the workshop because everybody's going to get a replay. So again, that's Thursday, November 5th. As I'm recording this, we haven't sold out yet, but I do think we will sell out. So if for some reason we have sold out or there are no spots left for you, still hop on our email list because our plan for 2021, this is the plan right now. I mean, it's a loose plan. But our plan is to do more of these joint yoga and group hypnosis and then add like a real strong theme to it, just to kind of like up level in different areas in our lives and just shine a light on more things that we can, you know, work to uncover and understand, heal and dissolve, but also to really start to embody just like a happier, more empowered, more fulfilled version of ourselves. So for more information on that, you can head over to Ashley's website. That's where we're hosting the event information. And it's ashleysondergaard.com, and you spell her last name Sondergaard. And if you click on events, you will see the magic of your gifts is the name of the event. And if you have any questions, you can always reach out to me. You can hop on her email list. You can check out our Instagrams just to stay connected. So if you're listening in the future or if this event has sold out, you will be notified of the next event, and then you can join us then. Okay, this intro is going way too long. oh well, right? Okay, so maybe we could even say this episode is sponsored by this event, The Magic of Your Gifts, Ashley Sondergaard and I. All right. So if you love this podcast, as always, my plea and my request for you to just leave a rating. Go to Apple Podcasts, find Past Lives and the Divine, and just click the 5 stars. If you're feeling moved, you can actually type in a review. Either way, thank you so much for being here. Now let's gather around the fire and let's get started. Okay, so this is a past life regression where I'm the client and my friend Allison is facilitating. And I had originally thought that we did this in May of 2020, but actually when I look back on the notes, it was June 27th of 2020. So there. And the funny thing about these notes is that Allison, my friend, has very distinct handwriting. And I'll tell you where, but like at some point in this session and this note-taking, it's so weird. The handwriting like totally changes. And she actually called it out. She's like, look at how this handwriting changed. And she was just like, I just felt like I was writing the same way as I always do, but the script, the handwriting was coming out totally different. So I'll call out when that is, because it's kind of at a interesting part of this past life regression. But anyway, the intention for this session was I wanted to see a past life that would help me to further develop my power, my talents, my gifts in this current life. And it was really just, that's kind of how I show up actually to most of my past life regressions, is a little bit more general, unless I'm dealing with something super specific. But at this point, or for the last couple of years, it's been a little bit more general, and I'm interested in kind of really cultivating my own gifts, because I know that everyone's gifts are different, right? Like, I think our gifts are kind of this really great combination of like our personality, our earth suit, our physical form, our body, and our soul, and our soul's experiences, and our soul's preferences. And when you mix that all up together, you kind of get like this unique blend of gifts and abilities and environments in which to show or shine or share those gifts and abilities. And I know that I have more in me, just like everybody else. Like, I have more gifts and more talents than I maybe believe or know of. And I believe that when we are accessing those gifts and really sharing and using them and being in the flow of our gifts, that leads to like a bigger sense of fulfillment. I don't know if it's bigger or if it's deeper or more potent or whatever, but you know, as long as our basic needs are met, like we feel safe, we have a place to sleep, we eat, we're, you know, living in a comfortable temperature, we don't have to worry about not making it through the night because we're too cold or whatever it is, as long as we have those basic needs met, I think that anything on top of that, nothing makes us feel as fulfilled as using and sharing and being aware of our gifts. And so that is just that's been on my mind for a while. And it's actually been on my mind for so long, which is why when Ashley Sondergaard and I decided to do this event together, yoga plus hypnosis, I was like, I know what we can do. Yes. So that was the intention, just to further develop my power, my gifts, get to know them better. And Allison did her typical induction that she uses with me and then planted me into a scene in another life.
I'm outside, but I feel like I'm in almost like a, it's real gravelly, sandy, like naturally that way, very dry. And it's almost like, I don't know what you'd call it, but like on a golf course, how there's a sand trap. It's like that, but like on a huge scale, but it's not like a big canyon. It's almost just like a bowl. And it's really quiet.
It was so quiet. Like, eerily quiet. And at this point, I remember looking and seeing the sky, and the sky was like this purplish color, you know, like how our sky is blue. I know there's like some reason why we see blue when we look up at the sky. That's more than just like the universe is blue. And whatever it was, the chemistry on this planet or wherever I was purple. But I was really just like, there's no way. Like, I must just be seeing this or something. Like, this is, so let me explain it like this. Like, oftentimes in a past life regression, what I'm doing as a facilitator, especially for someone who is first doing a past life regression, we got to kind of get used to like how we see, feel, sense, or know this information coming to us. And one of the things that I think is really important is to constantly reaffirm, or not constantly, but often enough as needed, reaffirm like a new client, someone who's new to this modality, and really get them to engage with every detail that they might be sensing. They might see it, they might feel it, they might just know it. And in that, every detail that you engage with, no matter how weird or out there, we get even more details, right? So it could be like, I don't know where I am. Okay, well, what do you see? I see trees. And as soon as you say, I see trees, or I know there's trees around me, or I know I'm in a crowd of people, then other things become more clear. It's kind of like we got to pull out all the different threads, and then we eventually kind of make like a fabric of a story. And I just did not want to even engage with that purple sky. It was like, for whatever reason, something in me was really resisting it. So I didn't bring it up there.
Are you alone? I think I'm alone. But I think I'm usually not alone when I'm here. It's almost like I feel like I'm alone, but I sense like there's more memories here with people as opposed to being alone.
So this is a place you've been before?
Yeah.
This is also what I think is so cool about past life regression is sometimes people come to it and they're like, but I don't get it. Like, I see a few scenes from a past life. Like, how can that be so life-changing or illuminating or healing or whatever? And it's not just those scenes, though. And I feel like I've said this so many times, but if you take this moment right now, like you're listening to this podcast, but you're also like probably doing something else, and maybe in the back of your mind, or maybe kind of your default emotions are a little better than normal or a little lower than normal. And if you were visiting yourself from the future, you could pause this moment and be like, oh, but yeah, I'm kind of feeling a little bit sad because of A, B, and C. Or, oh yeah, I'm feeling a little frustrated because this happened earlier in the day. Or I'm feeling really excited because I have a trip coming up later. Or whatever. This moment is so layered just because our brain has this ability to hold like memories of our past, recent past, and hopes, dreams, worries for the future, and then whatever's going on in the present. And the same is true in a past life regression. Sometimes we can see a past life scene and we see it with, you know, like in our mind's eye, as if we were seeing it through our eyeballs. And sometimes we can see that from that first person point of view. And sometimes we can see it from more like a third person point of view, like you're watching it on a movie screen. And either way, the client who is experiencing their past life scenes has this ability to go even deeper, which I think is so cool. And I use that as a facilitator. You know, if someone is having a bad interaction with their husband in that past life, to be able to go a little bit deeper and to be able to right there, without having to re-experience those past life scenes, understand that emotional connection to an activity, to a person, to a place. And the same is here true, where even though I was alone and I was clearly like the only person around, and at the time I didn't know it, but I was like the only person on this small planet, I knew there was very much an imprint in my mind of, yes, but I'm also here a lot with other people or other beings.
I think that I'm usually here with people who are like doing something with the ground, but it's more like study based, but it's not like, we're not like an archaeologist or something. I don't know, it's almost like the sky is like purple.
Okay. What time of day is it? Do you get a sense for that?
It was light, but now it's like getting dark.
So at this point, like, you know, observing the planet, the purple sky was just something that I couldn't deny, partially because what the fuck, a purple sky, but also because there was like nothing on this planet. I mean, it was really similar to like, if you've ever been to the Badlands in South Dakota, but if it was like more of a canyon, or not a canyon, but like I said, a bowl kind of, where you can see this impression in the planet, but it's massive. And it was really sandy, rocky, kind of like, the Badlands in South Dakota in the United States, or even like it kind of reminded me of a trip I went on over a year ago where a friend and I hiked like in Utah, like southern Utah in the United States. So kind of like that red, rocky, peach, tan, kind of that. And so I was like, I don't know, a purple sky? Fuck. Where am I? And it very much, like, as I paid more attention to the sky, it was very clear that I was not on Earth. And that, I think, is what I was really resisting. And the job I was doing was very much in that, you know, whatever the... I would call it Earth if we were on Earth, but like whatever the stuff, the dirt that I was standing on, I guess I would think like archaeologists, but to me that's like studying the past, and instead we were like studying potential for the future. That was the mindset. In my consciousness, it was more like future looking potential as opposed to trying to document or understand a history. Now, I am not at all like a sci-fi person, and Allison is a little more, I don't know if she is totally, I guess, but she is more than me. And the reason I know that is because she had a word for this, and it was like, oh, you were a Terra something. And I don't remember what it was, but basically that's what we were doing. And it took me a long time. So in these recordings that you're listening to, the sliced audio from the actual session, I had to cut out a ton of dead air because she would ask a question and it would take so long to get the answer. And this, you know, I've personally been a client for over 30 past life regressions. I don't know how many, but I kind of stopped counting at like 25 or 30. And because I don't know, clearly numbers don't mean anything to me, but I've had a lot. To the point where I don't resist. It's easy to get the information. It goes pretty quick. Just the more we do these things, the more we get information from our subconscious mind, the more we settle into that space where our conscious mind isn't leading the way, it just becomes easier to get the information. Not only easier throughout the session, like scene one, it's harder to get information than it is in scene three or five or seven, depending on how quickly it goes and how long the session is. But it's also over time, right? Like the first time I did a past life regression is completely different from the way I see it now. It's a lot easier to get into. I get more information. It goes a lot quicker. But in this one, there was something in me that was really, really resisting. And so I had a lot of dead air.
I don't know if I'm left here, but there's like, I don't have anywhere to go. Like, my only option is to just stay here tonight. But I'm not sure. I don't feel any, like, I don't feel any strong feelings of, like, abandonment, or it's just more kind of like, well, I guess this is it. Shrug. But I'm not thinking about where am I gonna sleep. Just kind of walking around.
So when I, as Gina, think about being the only person on a planet, you know, a barren planet, I mean, that's the shit my nightmares are made out of. So part of this was hard for me to kind of reconcile. So what happens when we doubt, or in my experience, what happens when I or a client doubts what we're seeing, it taints how much we can see and like what we get out of it. So I, for example, had a client a couple years ago who was having a great past life regression. She was seeing a lot, but then realized she was like in a jungle or some sort of wilderness setting and there was dinosaurs around. And that kind of really snapped her out of it, because it's my understanding that history books teach that dinosaurs didn't live when humans lived. And I could tell she was like just doubting the whole experience, right? Just kind of like, I don't know, killed the vibe of it all. And even though as a facilitator, I can sense that and I can urge her and give hypnotic suggestions to move beyond it, you know, humor yourself, just go with this story and just indulge in it and not automatically try to doubt it or block it or think it's not working because you're seeing something that history books tell us didn't happen, which as you can imagine, I believe that? I don't know. But what I do know is that that doubt can block information coming to us in a session. And so we're kind of, instead of just being totally in it, immersed in it, observing it, sensing it, knowing it, feeling it, instead part of us is kind of wrestling with this doubt. And that's when we get blocks. And so that's another reason why there was a ton of dead air here, was because I knew that I was wrestling with it, but I just like couldn't stop. It was just way too out there, because as this life where I was this man, and I believe I was kind of like mid-30s here, it was really just this sense of like, yes, I'm here. Yes, I'm alone. Yes, I'm usually with people, and I'm going to be here a while on my own. It wasn't like I was freaking out. Like, I feel like I would if someone put Gina on a different planet all alone, I would be like, you know, it would take a lot of mental gymnastics for me to be calm and get through it, as opposed to just totally enjoy it and be okay and at peace with it. And so part of it too was like his experience, his emotional reaction to this experience was so far removed from how I would deal with it today. Was like, it was just a lot to create doubt in my mind. Life on another planet, you know, being alone, left out there. This was like literally the shit my nightmares are made out of. And so that was part of it too, was trying to reconcile that.
I feel like I'm like waiting for a ship. I don't know if I was left in this bowl, or if I was left and that was part of my job or why I was here, but I'm waiting for this ship, and as I'm waiting, I'm just like immersing my consciousness in these other thoughts.
And so this part though, where he's like waiting and immersing himself in other thoughts consciously, just because he has no form of entertainment besides his mind, is so funny, because the word like conscious, or the phrase of like consciously immersing myself in thoughts and memories, is actually something that I do pretty regularly in this life, where I feel like I just don't want to be someone where every time I have free time, I'm looking down at my phone, which is something that I need to actively, consciously resist at this point in technology evolution in my life. Number one, I think that it's bad to be staring at that screen all the time. For me, I already have like tight neck issues, so I don't need to be like looking down at my phone, and because it like weirds me out on some soul level when I'm like in line at the post office, which I try to avoid at all costs, or in line at a store or whatever, and everyone around me is looking at their phone. You know, no judgment, I do it too, but something about a crowd of people looking at their phone like fucking weirds me out. Just weirds me out. It's like, what is going on? Why are, you know, like one part of me obviously completely understands what they're doing because I'm resisting that urge in myself. But then another part of me is just like, this is fucked up. Look at everybody just like looking at this thing in their hands. I don't know. Prime for mind control. I don't know if that's the fear. Who knows? But it is something I do where I'll be like, ooh, what have I been thinking about lately? And I'll just think, like, I'll intentionally wonder about something, theorize about something, relive a memory, focus on something in the future that I really am looking forward to. Or if it's something like right now, October of 2020, I'm thinking a lot about like what I want to do with the podcast in 2021. I want to release episodes every week. What does that look like? Is that realistic based on my work schedule? How could I make that happen without doing more work on my podcast? Which logically seems irrational, but I think I might be able to do it. Anyway, so it's funny that that's what I called it. I'm consciously immersing myself in like thoughts and memories, and I do that all the time. And I think it's such a benefit to intentionally do that, especially as an entrepreneur. I think time spent in pondering, wondering, and thought is something that the society does not put value on at all. But especially if you're an entrepreneur or a creative, or if you have to do anything that requires any previous thought, it's important to have that quiet time of thinking. Like, I think Bill Gates, isn't there something where he's like takes a week or two out of the year where he just like goes and reads and is quiet and thinks? And I don't really have a desire to do that, but it is something that is naturally worked into my day, and or most days, I should say. And that to me, I just think is so important. And as an entrepreneur, and like my second time as an entrepreneur, I spent 15 years in the wellness industry. I want to create a business that doesn't suck the life out of me. I'm not going to wake up one day and fucking hate it, hate the topic, think it's stupid. And so in that, it requires a lot of like thought and intention and cultivating my gifts and what it is that really does feel good. Whether it makes a ton of money right now, or the people can around me can logically understand why I would make that decision without seeing the final results. All of that requires thought. And so I just thought that was so interesting, that little tidbit of like, maybe that's a part of my soul, or maybe I learned that in some other life and just have always taken it with me. Anyway, as I looked back on it and was listening to it, I was like, wow, that is so interesting. I do that today. Like I mentioned before, also in this scene, there was also a part of my mind that was grappling with like this man's ability to be on this planet all by himself and be okay, at peace, totally, completely accept it and know it and feel safe and secure. And there was not an ounce of fear. It was different than I would ever imagine my experience to be. And I've devoted a lot of time to that difference between the two, but it was really, really like blocking my experience. And so I guess I leave that in there and I point it out because for whatever reason, that's like a point I will ponder in my world. And maybe you'll ponder it as well, like different times when you're having those experiences. But I think it's also good to say, like, even as someone who facilitates these sessions, and even as someone who's had many, many, many past life regressions myself, I still get fucking caught up in this shit. But there is a way out. And even when we feel like we're resisting, that doesn't mean we can't turn that ship around. And it doesn't mean that we don't get something out of the session. So that's, I guess, what I want to say about that.
The scene is so different from my experience. I'm having a hard time like reading it. It's just the emotion pattern is very different from mine.
What emotions are you sensing?
Just this very, like, content, focus. But the things I'm thinking about are, like, you know, life-changing. You know, leaving a loving relationship for a job, or not remembering the last time you saw that person. But I'm thinking about it as if I'm watering my plants at home, thinking about the neighbors I just saw 2 days ago. Like, it's not a big deal. It's, I'm just here doing this thing. And so the emotions, I don't know, like, they don't, I don't know what else to say it besides they don't make sense to my human mind.
Yes. Okay. So on top of it, this being on this planet alone, waiting for someone or something to return, and feeling just like focused and content right here. And then what I was doing, though, when I was consciously immersing myself in thoughts and memories, was I was having this memory of like this kitchen, and it looked like it's a very small kitchen. But what I could really grasp was like the tablecloth was kind of like this plaid or check or gingham kind of summery colors. And there was a woman there. And it was almost like, I would have said, my assumption was, I left that kitchen and that home and that woman and came here. But the emotions I was feeling about it were not the emotions Gina would have had if she left a good life and a great partner and was now alone on a planet. So that was also like, what in the fuck? Like, how is this person so calm and rational about it? But looking back on it and seeing the whole scope of it, it was just this like sense of acceptance of, here's where I am, and I love the bigger picture, and so I love this small picture, even though I'm, you know, bored and I've got a lot of time on my hands until, you know, the whatever happens next in my life. And so that was part of it too, was like this memory that I was having. I wasn't sure if it was a memory or if I was just like, now what would life be if this wasn't my path? And I'm not sure which one it was at the time of first being in that memory of that kitchen and that woman in this part of the scene, in this part of the past life regression. I felt like it was a memory, but then later on, I almost felt like maybe it wasn't a memory. Maybe I was just thinking like, what if I would have taken a different path? So who knows? But that was another kind of discrepancy between what's happening and how I'm feeling in this scene is completely so different and far removed from the experience that Gina would be having.
I feel like this is a life exploring another planet. I find myself resisting that because it's...
Okay. Just all your job is to do is to report what you see, not to make judgments on it. Not to accept it, not to deny it. Just describe what you see.
So that was me basically coming clean to Allison, like, I'm gonna need help. And what's so cool about hypnosis is like, when you're the client in that space, you know, even as the facilitator, when I say, okay, on the count of three, we're going to move to another significant event in this past life. And you're going to, on the count of three, the details from this scene are going to evaporate, dissolve, move away. And when I say three, details from, you know, another significant event in this past life will begin to come into your mind, into your awareness. And then I go one, two, three, and they're there. And it is just something about hypnosis, being in that space of the subconscious mind And it's just another example of how you are totally aware. Your conscious mind is there. Your conscious mind is aware, but it's your subconscious mind that's in the driver's seat. And so it's very much when I said that to Allison and she was just like, your job is just to observe. It was like, you wouldn't think I would need it, but it was like this permission slip of like, yep, it's weird. Just go with it. Now, at this time in the session, Allison didn't know that I was like on another planet. When I had mentioned like a ship is coming and when I see her notes, it's clear that like when she wrote down like waiting for a ship to come, it was like in her mind probably like I'm waiting for a boat, you know, to come floating over and come pick you up. And instead, when I said that, it was like she said she felt a major shift in the session just from how she was participating, how she was, you know, anytime someone's telling you a story, it's perfectly natural for us to start populating that story in our imagination, right? We might see the picture, whether it's the same as the picture as I'm seeing, I guess we'll never know. But she was also like, whoa, I just felt different in that. And this is where her handwriting changed. And so before I had said that I feel like I'm on another planet, she, like, the line that she wrote before that was her regular handwriting, or what, everything was like her regular handwriting. And then what she wrote before that, like, emotion patterns different from mine. And then she started writing content, focus, life-changing memories, don't make sense to my human mind. And then she wrote, I feel like I'm an alien. And that is like this different handwriting. I don't know. It's so bizarre. And so it was like everything is her regular handwriting. And then the moment we kind of shift to like, oh no, this is a life on another planet. And I tell her that that's what I think is going on. And she understands that. It was like the energetics of the room changed. It was really interesting. Like I felt it. When she was like, just observe, that's all you have to do. And then when I was like, okay, I feel like I'm on another planet. And I like accepted that within myself. I felt like the details were strong and fast moving, like they always are now usually are in a past life regression for me. And her handwriting just like changes. It's so crazy. So with this shift, something changes. Finally, I'm no longer the only person on this planet. And we actually go somewhere. So even though I'm having all these thoughts and memories, I'm still just like kind of standing. And then I move to a sitting position in this kind of dry, gravelly, dirt bowl in this planet. And so finally, once I recognize and accept like, okay, I'm on another planet. And Allison reminds me like, hey, just observe. That's all you have to do is observe. Then things kind of start to get moving.
I see a ship land. And I'm happy they're back.
Who's back?
It's a group of people who are co-workers, kind of a relationship like that, but they're also, I like them, we're friendly. There's also like a family vibe. Like we've all left our families to be here doing this stuff.
What kind of stuff?
We study other planets and the what I would call soil, but they have a different word that's like studying the surface of a planet.
What I think is interesting about my relationship to these people who came, or these beings that came on this ship, is something that I actually think about a lot and almost like have this yearning for. It's hard to explain. I mean, isn't all of this hard to explain? But it's the sense of like when I say it's like we're family, it's like how sometimes with family, it's like, you know, and this isn't my family experience necessarily, but I see it a lot on TV, I guess, where people are like in a family or in a neighborhood, or like right now, Alex and I are watching Schitt's Creek. I'm like super late to the game on that, and I am in love with it. Oh my God, it's so good. But one of the things is like when people show up and they are just being authentically themselves, how people who are opposite of them or different of them eventually can like warm up to them and just like love them for who they are, even though they don't always like them. And not like in a control-y, judgmental, conditional love kind of way, but like in a, I know you and accept you, and the parts of you that maybe annoy me don't really annoy me because I understand you. I don't know. Do you ever think about this? Like, and it just seems so freeing and comforting in that sense of like, you know these people, you maybe wouldn't hang out with these people, but by birth or geographical location, you are close to these people. And that's what was really strong there. And maybe it probably stuck out to me, honestly, because I think about it from time to time. It's one of the things I ponder is like, but if I really tease at that knot and that tanglement of what that is that I think seems so comforting, of a group coming together, again, because of like family ties, or we all live in the same neighborhood or the same town or whatever it is, or we all work at the same place, how you can come together and like and appreciate and accept people as they are, even if it's not necessarily like the flavor of person that you love the most. And that was just really, really strong there. And I talk a little bit more about my connection to these beings later on in the episode, later on in this session. But that's where I first felt it. And because it's something that I think about in my life as Gina a lot, and I observe a lot on TV, which I understand that TV is made up, but I do think that we have the human potential to feel that way and be that way. And so I don't have the answers, but that's something that I've been thinking about a lot. So when it came up as this really organic, authentic feeling in this life on this planet, when these people show up on, or these beings show up on this ship, that was really familiar to me, because it's something that I've, not familiar in the sense that I feel it all the time in my life as Gina, but more just like familiar of like, oh yes, yes, this is the feeling I've been thinking about. Yes, what is this?
We're looking for certain things in the surface that would allude to ability to sustain life, or previous ability to sustain life. But not just sustain life, we're also looking for elements we can use, elements we can learn more about that we don't know about yet. And so we go to these planets that are like barren, would have the potential, like the mildness that would hold life. So for example, I was able to be there on my own day and night, and I wasn't like too hot or too cold. It was just real mild.
Okay.
And so then that way we can also learn how it's safe for us to be there, so we can maximize our time there by, you know, getting as much work done as safely as possible, so we can just move to the next. And I feel like this planet is just like nothing. And that's, they left me there to use my materials and like study it. Something I do, I'm able to study certain something, I don't know what. And so this planet just doesn't have a lot on it, even though I feel like there's potential here for something. And that's why I was just like kind of bored walking around having all these thoughts, because I was alone there. And I didn't have much to do because there wasn't much to study or look into. It's all the same. It's just different levels of it.
And so with that, I got the feeling that even though I was there alone, the beings that showed up on a ship were different from me, but we do this work together a lot. And for whatever reason, they were unable to, or I was just more suited to stay there. For some reason, someone had to stay there. So even though I got the sense that this is something I do, this is the way we work, they drop me off, I do some stuff, they pick me up, was really part of it was like, I hadn't allotted time to do the work, but there just like wasn't enough work to do, which is why I was just kind of like sitting around in my thoughts, waiting for them to show up again in their ship. So when they did come, here's what I saw.
I can't tell if this is a really big ship or if it's just a couple of them on there. But they've got like human figures. But we're all in suits, so I can't tell if we look human.
Does this bother you that you can't tell that?
No, but I feel like, I don't know if we're human or not.
Okay.
I get the sense I'm different from them. Like if they're one kind of being, I'm a different kind of being. But we work together. And we've worked together so long that sometimes I step back and go, I can't believe I'm so comfortable doing this work. I've considered how I maybe started doing this work. It's all very different. It's hard to explain it, but the sky is like purple tone. Like how our sky goes from light blue to dark blue, it's like light purple to dark purple.
Clearly, I could not get over the sky, but it was such a cool, just a cool color landscape. So if you think of like Southwest United States and it's like the oranges and the reds and the pinks of the landscape, but then instead of being against a blue sky, it was against a purple sky. That was so crazy. And very, like, I can still vividly see it in my mind. And it's just like, whoa, holy shit. And what's so funny is, like, sometimes when I'm just out walking or thinking or something, you know, maybe a podcast or a story or I'm watching a documentary, something that I think of is, like, you know how the sun looks, like, on a sunny day? And I'm like, how does this, you know, you can see it in your mind. Like, imagine a bright sunny day in the middle of summer and you look up at the sky and you kind of know like how big the sun's going to be, what it's going to look like, because you've probably seen it every day almost of your whole life. And sometimes I think of, and I've been doing this for years, of like, but what does the sun look like from a different point of view of a planet? Or you know how sometimes like Venus or Jupiter will be really bright in the sky. Sometimes I'm like, what does Earth look like from those planets? And probably the answer is boring. Like it just looks like a star, or the sun looks exactly the same no matter where you are in the Milky Way. But I just think of that. And then I start to think of like, well, like what is it like those planets with more than one moon? Like I think our one moon is so beautiful. Like I think my mind would be blown if I saw two moons, you know, from the vantage point of being on the planet in which these moons are orbiting around. So, and I'm sure there would just be like, You know how we have all our theories about, like, you know, if you're someone who works with the lunar cycle, like what you do on a new moon or a dark moon or a full moon or a waning or a waxing moon. And I just think, what would those practices be like if you lived on a planet with two moons? I don't know. These are the thoughts that I have when I'm, I don't know, when I hear things, my mind just goes and I'm such a thinker. Okay, so on to the next scene.
I'm like in a well-lit space. I think I'm on that ship. I don't know if they put something in my body and left me there and now they're taking something out of my body, but they're like kind of cutting into my abdomen. I feel scared of the pain, but I don't feel scared of them or what they're taking out. Monitor something? I don't know. But it's like right on the side of my abdomen.
How do you feel? So how do you feel about this whole process?
I feel it's very similar to the way I feel as Gina when I'm like on a long hike. Like, I want to do this. I know I'll look back on this and feel good about it. But in the moment, it's not necessarily super comfortable. And so I just stay in the moment, just this step. What am I doing right now? And that's very much the feeling there where it's like, this situation is not fun, but like on a whole, I like the experience, I like what it does, and so this is very uncomfortable, getting this thing taken out.
Okay.
When I was younger, I don't know how old I was, 13 or 12 or 14 or something, me and my sister and our good friend watched that movie Fire in the Sky. And it was something just like the paranormal and ghosts and all of that stuff. Something that I, somewhere inside of me, is very drawn to that experience, to learning more about it, to understanding it. And then there's another part of me. This isn't any longer the case, but when I was that young and even into my 20s, where there was a part of me that was like beyond terrified to like hear about it, because I'm someone who I've got, I don't know if it's just a very vivid internal landscape, but it's easy for me. And I've been this way since I was a small kid, where even my mom said, like, even watching the intro to Scooby-Doo used to give me nightmares. Like, I don't know if you're a child of the 80s and 90s, but there was that show Rescue 911. And I don't really remember the premise of it besides like terror and emergencies, but I would watch it and then get like the worst nightmares. So for me, I've had nightmares where I'm like on an alien ship being like experimented with. And while I do believe that truth shows up in dreams, because these dreams for me happened in relation to watching that movie Fire in the Sky, hearing about that story, and like soon after that, or if I kind of like went down a rabbit hole where I was thinking about it a lot, or, you know, reading a book on it or something like that, I would get these horrible nightmares. So I personally don't feel like it was my experience. I really do think it was just a dream put in my brain because I was thinking about it a lot. And so that is my experience with even imagining being in a situation like this. But I was very much only afraid of the pain and not afraid of the beings that were doing it to me. And even though I couldn't really see them, if I had to guess, they were kind of like in the little gray category. Even though they weren't little, they were tall. Yeah, I guess like they were tall. I can't really see their faces, and they had two arms, two legs. And when they were cutting me open, it was just very like smooth, pale skin, but not like pale white skin of an earthling, with white skin, but like more of a grayish or bluish tone. I don't know. I'm very new to the Alien game, or I'm not new to it, but I do not think of myself as even maybe qualified to speculate on it, even though I'm doing a whole podcast episode on this. I guess that's part of my trepidation, but so it was very much the fear of the pain. It's just like if you have like that kinesio tape on a sore muscle and you need to rip it off, you want it off, it needs to come off, you wanted it on and now it needs to come off. It's like still that pain is like, ouch, 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 you know? And that's what I was afraid of.
They like, with a laser kind of thing, like sewed me up, not sewed me up, but like my abdomen doesn't even have a mark there. And we're just laughing about how scared and nervous I was when they were doing that.
I think it's funny because when I was experiencing this, because the human mind is so layered and easily layered, it reminded me of something that I see in my dad. So for my dad, I'm his health advocate, I guess is what I call it. So I go with him to all his doctor's visits, and he's what the medical industry would call healthy, but he's usually got like at least one health thing that he needs to deal with. Possible hospital stay every year, it seems like, or that's about what it is every year. And anyway, it's fun to go and with him on some level because he makes me laugh. Like we are not a lot alike. In some ways we're alike, in some ways we are not a lot alike. And one of the ways is like, he's a tall, you know, self-employed, lives alone, I don't know, 60 something year old man. And he, like, if he gets a shot or gets his blood taken, it's like a lot of cringing, there's noises, there's jumping, you know, like jumping in the seat. And I just think it's funny. And then like me and the nurse will just kind of look at each other and be like, this guy, come on, just like bring the drama down a little bit. And that's how it was here, where I had like freaked out on the table. They took it out, and then we had, you know, a good laugh. Like they were laughing, the beings that put it in me and took it out of me. Then in this scene when they were taking it out, we were all just laughing about it. And what were they taking out? It was like before they left, they had put this monitor of some sort in me. And it was like when I looked down in my abdomen after they sewed me up, it wasn't a sewing, it was like a laser beam that they just like hit the incision with, and it just like went away. But my abdomen was like smooth and lighter color, like I didn't even have a belly button, but it was kind of more like a white person's human skin. Then their skin was like pale, but more like bluish grayish. And so that monitor was something. It was my understanding that it was like they couldn't stay on that planet, but they still needed and wanted to study it. And that was part of how we worked together. Not like I was totally their guinea pig, but like it was, we were working together. Like there were some things that they were doing that I couldn't do and some things that I could do that they couldn't do. And that's why. And so there was something with the monitor inside of me played a role in them collecting data, just me being on that planet in the daytime and through the night. And they were able to then take that monitor out of me and get some sort of data out of it that served their purpose of research.
The place I come from was looking at, I don't know, life on different planets maybe, and created a partnership with this other species or other kind of being, and they tapped me to see if I wanted to help because I was like an archaeologist or an astrophysicist or something. Like the work I did on that planet with that life actually would translate very nicely to this research of other planets, whatever my skills were. And so it was just like an opportunity that was like, I was just doing what I loved and being in it and not attaching myself to it. It was just something I loved to do. And so I made money doing it. made a living doing it. And then in doing that work, I was then recognized by, I don't know, the powers that be, as someone who would be a good fit for this partnership with these other beings. And because I loved this work, it was another interesting way to do it. And it could help our whole species, I guess. And so it was kind of a no-brainer to take the job.
So no matter what kind of work I did on the planet that I had originated from, whatever that was, it made me a good candidate for doing the work that I'm doing in these scenes. And I don't know what that was. I don't know the planet that I originated from. We didn't go there. And it wasn't really something that I was missing, or I didn't have a feeling of being homesick. And so just given the intention of my session, which was just to focus on the life where I was like using my gifts and cultivating my gifts, even if people think it's like odd or not necessary, or, you know, for whatever reason, it's not worth time. It is something that I was doing. It was something I was enjoying, and I was just peacefully doing it, not worried about what other people think. So I'm not sure where I came from, but it was like my history lined up perfectly to do this work. Like, not only my history, but my work experience and who I was as a person. With that, then Allison cued me to go to the final scenes in this life.
I'm a very old man on a different planet, but there's people that live on this planet. It's a planet real similar to Earth, but just the elements are much more dangerous. So, like, we can swim in the ocean here in certain parts, but that planet is like, the ocean will swallow you whole. And the weather patterns are just a little more erratic, and there's more water, and the water is just wild.
In the past few years, I think this was probably, I don't know, in the last 5 years at some point, I had this dream that I was on this other planet. And I was on this other planet teaching them about certain ways of living. And I don't know what those ways were. But while I was on that planet in the dream, I just see us working with people. And when I say us, it was like I was working alone on this planet, but in the dream I was working alone. I was with other people, but I was like working. The other people were participating on some other level. But I wasn't necessarily like the only person doing this work. I just wasn't around those people. But I did have a feeling in the dream that it was kind of like a group effort, maybe among some different beings, to go to some planet and make some changes. And this planet, what stuck out to me was the same as what I saw in this final scene of this past life, where it was like, I had this feeling of like, I love being here. And it was a love. It's like when you enjoy something so much, and then it leaves for whatever reason, and then you get something else in your life that kind of reminds you of that thing that you loved so much. And you might end up loving this new thing for other reasons, but for sure, it has the same resonance as the previous thing. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe I'm the only one. But that's the feeling I had here, where it was like, this planet is so much like Earth, and it helped me feel connected to Earth. And I remember like romantically thinking about life on Earth and the landscape and how beautiful she is and just the untouched lands and what they look like and just how I feel when I'm there. And this was very much like Earth, right? It had mountains, it had water, it had hills, it had flatlands, it had canyons, it had all the things. But if you were to take Earth and just like turn it up, like turn up the colors, turn up the danger, turn up the dynamics, turn up the beauty, that's what this planet was. So just like how on Earth we'll like, you know, go to the beach and maybe some people go swim in the water at the beach. They swim in the ocean. And that was not something that you would do there. Like the elements of that planet were so tremendous. They were so dynamic. They were just like, it was too dangerous. It was much more dangerous. The elements of that planet were much more dangerous than the elements of Earth. And I know nature and Earth can be relenting and unforgiving. But this was just on a whole other scale. But still, I loved being there because I just loved the variety and it reminded me of Earth. So when I saw this scene, I couldn't help but be like, hey, I've been here before. Like, I've been here in a dream before. And that, to me, my dreams sometimes give me intuitive hits. Sometimes they give me other insights. But for the most part, it's just kind of like a wild ride that I'm not trying to tame and I don't have any intention around like setting intentions for my dreams at night. It's just not something that has organically come up. I don't know. I think someday I would. For a while, I was really interested in lucid dreaming and I was like reading books on it. But there's just something in me that just doesn't it's not attractive to me when someone's like, step one, do this, step two, do that. I just kind of feel like, I feel like I'll get there in a different way in the future, but I'm not putting really any effort into it now. And so when I was in this scene, the final scenes of this life, that was one of the things that really was strong to me. It was like, oh shit, I've been here before in a dream. And it was like, yeah, I love this planet. And so the difference between this final scene and what I saw in my dream was I was very old in this scene of this session. But in my dream, I was like pretty young, like maybe like in my 40s or 50s. I'm not sure my age in the dream, but I felt young. Or I should say I felt younger than what I saw in this session, in this scene. I was pretty old and sharing knowledge with the people on this planet and doing work like that and just overall being really, really happy to be on this planet.
I decide to stay here because it reminds me of Earth. I don't get the feeling I came from Earth or originated from there. But I liked Earth a lot and it reminds me of Earth. I don't have the option to settle on Earth for whatever reason. And so I settle here with these people. And now I don't research, but I'm more a resource. So I'm an elder type, I guess, but people see me essentially as like an encyclopedia for all the work I did. So I'm able to still work without actually doing the hard work.
So an educator of sorts.
Yeah.
What I think is really cool about doing a few or many, in my case, past life regressions is eventually as the client, you just get more confident, more grounded in the experience of being in trance. So even that little bit where I was like, it reminds me of Earth and I love it, but for whatever reason, I can't settle on Earth. That's not an option. Is like a way where we can, it's almost like we're training our minds to like see things from a different angle, like answer a question before we even have it, right? Because if I was the facilitator, I'd be like, well, if you love Earth so much, why don't you go to Earth? What's going on, you know? And knowing that in myself, it's like I kind of asked myself that question and then answered it right there. And I think that that's what's so cool is like the more you do it, the more used to you get being in a trance, the easier it is to kind of facilitate almost your own experience. And so I say that a lot to people who download my free past life journey that you can get at pastlivesandthedivine.com. It's a free at-home past life journey recording that you can take on your own. And the first time people do it, can be confusing or discombobulating, but the more we do it, the easier it is to get more information and just the more grounded and aware we can feel in those scenes, so we're more able to like explore different parts of that scene in ways that can help us understand things, dissolve fears or blocks, or heal anything in our lives. And I just saw, when I'm listening to that recording, that's what I hear there. So I just wanted to point that out.
It was a really unique opportunity to partner with another, these other beings who had the money, not the money, that's not it, but the means and the technology to travel as far as we did. And without them, we couldn't have done that as a people. And that opportunity isn't a thing anymore. People don't do that anymore for whatever reason. So it was like this very in-depth knowledge that no one else has gone back to do any more work with. But for some reason, the knowledge is still helpful. So people, I talk to a lot of young people about it. They learn a lot from me. It's almost like a chunk of history that they keep researching, but instead of opening a book, they talk to me.
Here, Allison moved me forward to the part of the scene where right before where my soul leaves that body. And so with that, what I think is so cool about this death scene is that it was very, let's see, how do I want to put it? It's like I was able to consciously ascend out of my body, which I think that it's an uncommon or maybe even unpopular thought, but I think that death could be a lot more beautiful and transformative for everybody, including the person dying and the people around them, if we just treated death a little bit differently, like we treat a graduation or a birth or, and I'm not trying to discount it. If anything, I want to bring more like honor to the person dying, more appreciation for their life, appreciation for their eternal soul and all of their soul's experiences and all of the work that we do to evolve as a soul on this planet. And then also how all of our earnest work can positively influence everybody around us. No matter if your platform is you have a podcast or you have clients or maybe you just have friends, not just, maybe you have friends or maybe you have a small family, and whatever your sphere of influence is, whoever you influence, and it's not the bigger the better. I don't believe that. I don't feel that. And so I think it's just this like, there's room for improvement on how we transition into death and how we feel about death. And of course, I feel that way because I have these spiritual beliefs where it's not the end. It's just like a new beginning. It's a transformation. It's a change. And I think that there's just a lot of improvement that can happen around death. And I've said before on this podcast and in many conversations outside of this podcast is that I would love to somehow intentionally go about like ascending out of my body. And I'm not saying like ending my life early, but I'm saying like if I have a terminal illness and it's getting so much worse that I'm like losing who I am and my existence is painful and it's painful for everybody around me, I would like to be able to like make the decision to consciously ascend and not have it be premature or a fearful reaction of something, but more having more honor and reverence and ceremony around that decision, and then in turn helping me and helping the people around me. I don't know. I'm like new to this. Hopefully I've got like at least 50 years before that happens. But I think that maybe my goal is to feel peace about the transition, to feel proud about how I transition and my life leading up to that transition. And oh gosh, Roxanne is snorting and whining in her sleep. I don't know if you can hear that. And so this death scene was the first death scene that I experienced where it was like a little more of that conscious ascension out of the body. So here we are in that scene.
This death is very different. I am alone, but it's almost as if I prepared for this like I was preparing for a trip. I like told people about it. I said goodbye.
I had been preparing to leave my body. And I just think what a beautiful thing this could be if we did this on Earth on somehow, right? And I'm not talking about a painful suicide that leaves everyone going, what in the fuck, right? Including the person maybe who gets to the other end and they're like, shit, I shouldn't have done that. And I'm not passing judgment. I have love and compassion for people who feel like that is their only choice. I don't have any judgment against it. And actually, in past life regression with client sessions and myself, it's not totally uncommon to experience a life where you ended it early. And that's not what I'm talking about here. And so, like I said, the elements of that world were just so treacherous, I guess. And so that's how people died. So people prepared to die. It was my understanding. I wasn't necessarily like special in this ability to do it. It was just like the way of life on this planet. And I was in this like, kind of like a bubble, I guess. And I'm laying on my back in this bubble. And my loved ones put me in the ocean. And essentially, you just float and eventually your soul leaves your body. And the ocean takes your body.
I feel like I'm being rocked by waves. It's so different. But it's very much like I'm going to leave my body. But there's no fear, nothing like that. It's taking longer than I thought it would, though.
So I'm in this bubble thing in the ocean, and it's essentially I'm being rocked. And it's like what felt like when you're little and you're being rocked, or when an adult is rocking a baby to sleep. Instead of drifting off to sleep, I was being like drifted out of my body, which was very relaxing, but it took longer than I thought it should.
But my soul is like, feels very peaceful. Like it just literally got rocked. And instead of getting rocked to sleep, it got rocked out of the body. Just like how when you go to sleep, sometimes you think, oh, it's taking me forever to fall asleep. And then when you wake up in the morning, it was like, oh, I fell asleep so quick, but I remember it thinking it took forever. That's the feeling I have.
With my soul outside of that body, then Allison had asked me questions just about that life. So after the death scene, if you're someone who does have a death scene, most people do, some people do not. But with that soul hovering outside of that body, it's a really great way to just reflect on that life from the vantage point of the soul, you know, without like the grudges or resentments or annoyance that can happen of the ego. And instead you're looking at it just from a really beautiful, highest and best point of view that is your soul. So Allison had asked me what is my reflection of that life as my soul is hanging out outside of that body.
Even though some maybe think it was like lonely, or I was just like open to all these new experiences, and I just had a really open heart. And so whenever I came into contact with anyone else, it was like I had this ability to just like really see them and love them as they are and appreciate them, because I spent so much time alone on these planets that when I saw these people, I was so excited to see them. Instead of seeing them every day, taking them for granted, they get on your nerves. It was like I always had this perspective of spending so much time alone that when I was around other beings, it was just like I just ate it up. And in turn, they all really loved me and like opened up to me.
This idea of being so much more open to like accepting people and just loving them as they are seemed like it was informed, or at least in this audio splice that we just listened to, of like, it was almost like born out of this, like, I spend so much time alone, and so these are the people I see, and so I automatically love them a little bit more, you know, like we give them a little more grace. And at this point in my life, this is going to make me sound like an asshole, but I promise I'm not. Like, I'm very kind and compassionate. But when someone is like trying to dominate my time, or someone is like super needy in a not childlike way, right? Like, I'm intentionally do not have children. I'm not going to have children. I really value my alone time. I need it for my sanity. And so when I'm with people who don't respect that, or I'm in the orbit of people who don't respect it, don't care about it, don't want me to have alone time, want to take up all of my time, I get incredibly resentful. And this is something that's like a newer revelation, like in the last couple of years, like that can taint an entire relationship. And while I've noticed that in myself, re-listening to this, and specifically that audio splice that we just listened to, where it was like, maybe, and I don't know, I'm in the middle of it right now. I'm like in the soup of it, so I don't have a nice answer to tie it all up. But maybe part of that resentment is this fear that they're going to take up all of my alone time or free time. And I don't know, I'm going to be thinking about that, of like, in this life, it was so clear, like I spent all this time alone. And so naturally, when beings come around, even if they're not like perfect and totally enjoyable and we're really vibing, I can still see them for who they are and love their uniqueness, even if it's not necessarily like my favorite flavor of person. And so I don't know, I'm just thinking that. I wonder if part of my, you know, increased resentment or fear of or non-enjoyment of people in my orbit that seem to not care about time and me having to like put up those boundaries, is that such an emotional reaction for me because there's an underlying fear of this person could take up all of my time. They want all of my time. I'm never going to have alone time. They're doing this to me. I mean, it seems in alignment with the way my mind can like take off and run and be like, it's going to be like this forever. I don't know. I'm very much in the soup of that right now. So I don't know. Maybe that helps you to hear me say that, but it helps me to say it. So that's what I got out of that. That was interesting. In the next audio clip is my name from that past life. And what I think is so fun about asking a name, sometimes I don't if it seems like we've got a lot of ground to cover, but if I do ask a name, I think it's interesting when it's like a name that's a different language, a name that we've never heard before. Like, and when I say we, I mean the person in the client seat. And that was definitely my experience on this journey. So here's what my name was.
I think my name is something like Anat, like A-N-A-T, but like Anat, not Anat, but like Anat. I don't know, the A at the front's really big.
And now one of my favorite questions was this a good life? What made it good?
It was a good life because life that feels good really just makes us feel full on a soul level. And that looks different for every soul. So some people think it's a life of travel. Some people think it's a life of kids, a life of service, a life of passions and hobbies and friends. But it's more about having a full soul. So you just have to figure out what makes your soul full. And then it's a good life. And that's why that life looked so good, is because, felt so good, is because I was open to getting it filled on many different ways.
I just loved this point of view. And while it's something that I've been thinking about for a while, of like what makes a good life, I mean, ever since I started doing past life regression myself as a client, and then especially it really got ramped up when I started facilitating the sessions myself, was like, whenever it's a good life or a really fulfilling life, it's often the simple things. It's not like, oh, well, I had a private jet and, you know, had my own fleet of ships. It's really just like love and joy and like being this sense of freedom. Even if you feel like, well, I have a job I don't really like that much, is there like something that can help you feel more free in choosing that job every day? You know, it's really about our perception of our life, and it's really the simple things that can make us feel the most and make it feel like a really good life. If we let it, anyways, right? Like, if our perception is that we need to have all the things that we don't have in order to feel happy, then that's not going to feel very good. But when we can look back on a life and see all of the things that made it really, really beautiful and wonderful and fulfilling, it's always the simple things if we let it. And it's the big things and the status and the money and all the comparison and where we line up with other people. Like, it's never that. It's always about just showing up like as an imperfect human and enjoying what you enjoy and doing what you love to do. And it's not about never having to be with people you don't like or do things you don't like, but it's about like just really allowing yourself to immerse yourself in that experience and just be filled up by the things that fill us up. And so having those thoughts and having this what is a good life question that I've been thinking about and asking my clients in session, and I even ask my friends like when we're doing things and there's a lull in the conversation, and to hear this explanation of it in terms of like filling your soul, you know, I think that that's what we mean when we say I just want something more fulfilling, or I feel more fulfilled, or I don't feel fulfilled. It's like the more action-oriented way of looking at it, for me anyways, that I didn't even know was a thing until doing this session with Allison, and then re-listening to it, is like, yes, it's soul-filling. You know, fulfilled is like kind of this word that we all want, but like when the rubber hits the road, what does that really mean? And for me right now, that thought of like doing things that fill you on a soul level is just like a different way to look at it that I think would illuminate more options to fill our soul and feel like it is a really good life. Because why not start doing that now as opposed to being like, oh, I see that as I reflect. I'm going to try to remember that. No, like see it now. See it now. That's where I'm at. That's always my goal, is like, how can I not just create a life that I'm proud of and fulfilled by on a soul level when my soul leaves my body, but how can I be aware of it when I'm in it so I can squeeze more out of it? That's where I'm at.
It was another life I lived where I was doing work that if most people had knowledge of what I was doing, they would have something negative to say about it. Whether it's not valid, or we don't need it, or what's the point. And it's just like, again, that doesn't matter, because we don't get filled up, our soul doesn't get filled up by what other people think of us. It gets filled up with like what we do and how we feel. So if we're connecting with people, if we're doing things that interest us, if we're like sharing time and space with people that we find interesting, or we love, or we like, it really doesn't matter what other people think, unless their thoughts are like they want questions on what you're doing, you know. If they want more information, they're interested, then that can be part of like sharing, then would be part of filling that soul up. But in terms of, like, it's just a whole new level of disconnecting from what people may or may not think of what you do.
Yes, this is another thing I love about past life regression, is not only this idea of, like, being able to walk a mile in someone else's shoes or a different body's shoes, but also being able to see themes that run through our lives, whether they're good or things we want to change, things we enjoy, either way, seeing those same things play out in a different life can just be incredibly validating. Like, you're on the right track. This isn't something that you're crazy and making up, or it's just another way, another perspective, another way to see it, another way to look at something. And maybe instead of feeling less than excited about it or like it's not a big deal, and instead we feel appreciation and we can, like, honor it and grow it and engage with it more, so we can just feel better. And I love that about past life regression, because that's all of these sessions, like, even if we see a life that is similar to ours or completely different than ours, there's always more nuanced things, themes, and happenings and emotions that can just illuminate more and give us a different perspective that we then take into this life. And oh my God, if we don't need that in the world today, this idea of, oh, you say this is a problem, and even though it's not a problem for me, I'm going to honor that you think it's a problem for you and try to help you find a solution. I just think, like, life can only get better the more we open up to that. And it's just, you know, one of the thousands of things I love about past life regression. And another thing I say in response to that audio that we just listened to was, I really liked, and I wrote down, like, the soul is filled not by what we do, but how we feel about what we do. And I just, it's a great reminder for me for those things that I think, you know, I would rather not do in my life. I mean, we all have that. No matter how good our lives are, there are things that are kind of like a drain or annoying and we don't want to do them, or they're totally painful and we have to go through it. But when we get more accustomed to seeing what fills our souls up, I think it's then easy in that moment to be like, you know what, this thing that I have to do really sucks, but I feel better when I can see, you know, I'm helping someone. And so I'm going to go into this, you know, day of work or this event or this thing you have to do that you don't want to do, and instead I'm going to see if I can make it a little bit more soul-filling by a change in perception, a change in the way we act, a change in what we think about while we're there. And I really liked that. Like, the soul is filled not by what we do, but how we feel about what we do. And so then with that, it's like, what makes your soul feel full? Acknowledge it, you know, try different things to find more things that fill you up, fill me up. And then when I'm doing things that are a little more draining or annoying or things I don't want to do, but I have to do because that's life as an adult, can I add in some of these soul-filling things? Even if it is like, oh, I got to drive 4 hours to, you know, bring my dad to the doctor. It's like, well, what are some things? Like, he makes me laugh. I can focus on the ways that he makes me laugh. I can, you know, instead of being totally annoyed by the medical system and the things we're going through there, it's like, well, can I listen to a really good audiobook on the drive there? Can I listen to great music? Can I call someone who makes me laugh? Like, just thinking about, like, when we know what fills us up, first of all, it's fun trying to see what fills us up. I think so anyways. And then when we do that, then we can actually, like, strategically place those things in our lives where we need a little bit of a refill. And this past life and just the reflection from the vantage point of the soul at the end of this life just really affirmed that in me. And I love it when I'm thinking about something and kind of coming up with my own theories about my own life, and then someone comes in with different theories about the same thing or a different way of going about something, whether it's a person or a past life that comes into my awareness and my life. And I just love it when I can hear someone else kind of like I guess, validate, like, how I'm feeling. Because often I think it's easy for all of us kind of on the fringe here, especially talking about past lives, and now I'm talking about a life on another planet. And it can feel, like, isolating, and in that, you can feel kind of crazy. And for me, my experience is, like, when I feel a little isolated and, like, I'm the only one having any sort of experience, then I start to doubt that experience. But for me, I don't always, like, doubt the experience. I'm more doubting myself. And so in this, it's, like, it's just more validation of, like, the life that I'm leading today in the way I feel and my theories on things. I don't know. Just validated it and made me feel a little less crazy, even though I'm getting the validation from a different life of mine. I don't know. That might be too crazy for some people. If that's not too crazy for you, then you're my kind of person. Hi, friend. Thanks for being here. Okay, this podcast episode is so long, and I'm going to end it right there, because that's all I have. This is very much not a finished product. I feel like most of the past life regression sessions I do are kind of like, if they're recent, they're really situation focused, and they kind of get me over a certain hump of something. And a lot of them are, you know, like 4 or 5, 3 years old. And that's a lot of time to go by and a lot of healing to be done, you know, on a subconscious level, whether I'm consciously actively trying to heal or subconsciously things are being realigned without my knowledge. But this one was so recent and so far out there that all I have is what I've talked about today, and what I'm taking with is just this idea of, like, being more focused on the soul-filling parts of it. And it's just another reason, another perspective on how much other people's opinions just, like, do not matter. Even if those opinions are thrust upon me without my invitation or request, this is just another reminder and another way to look at, like, leading a fulfilling, a good life. And for me, what I'm really taking from this is, like, focusing on the work, being in the work, enjoying the people around me, relishing in my alone time, doing my thing, and then just knowing, like, when I'm with people, it's, like, a beautiful, wonderful thing, and to just see the best in them. And yeah, I don't know. I'm still very, very much processing, if you can't tell. That is officially, this is where I'm ending, episode number 29, Life on Another Planet. And I would love to hear what you think about this episode. So either hit reply to my email if you are on my email list. And if you're not on my email list, get there, because the events I've been doing have been selling out, and the people to hear about it first and have the ability to register first are the people on my email list. So you can go to pastlivesandthedivine.com/subscribe. Let me know what you think about this episode. If you loved or liked this episode, if you could go to Apple Podcasts and click the 5 stars, I would really appreciate it. If you have a little bit of a freaky friend that you think would like this kind of conversation with myself, then could you forward it to them? That would be the best, and I would appreciate it so, so much. Thank you so much for listening and being open to the power of our past lives. All of our lives, past, present, future, and all of our eternal soul experiences while we walk this 3D earth together. Take anything from this episode that makes you feel better, and just leave the rest.